Good morning. I hope you guys had a great weekend. I'm glad to have you here. Most important announcement is that this week in lab, we're beginning the QA labs, qualitative analysis labs. And these labs, generally people find to be fun, and you can decide for yourself if that's broken, but honestly, for what it's worth, they usually are. But we're gonna have lots and lots of chemicals around us all the time. So definitely bring your safety glasses, because these are definitely labs where you've got to wear your glasses and stuff. But also, I really don't want you to wear some kind of shoes with open toes, sandals, stuff like that. I have had stuff that leaks from the tabletop to the ground, and if your shoe is open, stuff like that can be kind of bad. So naturally, the weather is the nicest during this time when I ask this, and again, fascist chemist, but anyway, please this week do not wear open-toed shoes, sandals. Bring an extra pair of shoes if you want to put them in the car so you've got them in case you accidentally leave them on, stuff like that. That would be really cool. Any questions on that? On Friday, we talked about how you can use tables of reduction and oxidation, and you can find electrochemical cell potentials. So this is like a chemical battery, and there will be a voltmeter reading associated with it. And there's interesting things you can do with it. But before we see the interesting things you can do with it, there's questions that pop up like this. Like if we create a battery where there's a piece of cadmium metal and a cadmium 2 plus solution, and on the other side we have iron and an iron plus 2 solution, it'd be nice to know like which direction this reaction's going. And you can see here there's like a left and a right combination. So cadmium could be oxidized to cadmium 2 plus, and if cadmium's being oxidized, then iron plus 2 would be reduced to iron. Or is cadmium 2 plus being reduced to cadmium metal? And iron is being oxidized to iron plus 2. So all of these solution pieces are present, but we do need to know which way they're going. Like which one of, is it the top one or the bottom one that's present? Remember, you have to have something being oxidized and something being reduced. So you couldn't have two pieces being oxidized, for example. And the way to figure this out is you can look at these cell potential values. And on Friday we saw how there's a whole bunch of these. They're almost always written as reductions, so electrons are reactants. And then you have, there's different values. Now there's different ways to do this, but one way we saw to do it was the southeast, excuse me, the southeast northwest rule, which isn't my overall favorite, but you can do it that way. And what that says then is, all right, you want to have an overall positive value. So if you flip this one around, all right, if you flip the minus 0.44 to positive 0.44, you get cadmium as a reactant, cadmium 2 plus and 2 electrons are products. What do we do to the sign of E if you flip the reaction? Change it around, that's right. So what was a negative 0.44 would become a positive 0.44. And what we're gonna see in a little bit is that you're gonna have a spontaneous reaction, which is nothing more than my snobby way of saying you push a button and something happens, like my remote control laser pointer. You're gonna have a spontaneous reaction if you get an E, overall E value, which is positive. So by flipping not the minus 0.4 value, but flipping this one, then you end up with essentially positive 0.44 minus 0.40. You end up with a very small but positive positive 0.04 volts. And this then will tell us which way our reaction's going. So if we flip this one around, cadmium became a reactant, cadmium 2 plus became a product. So the reaction that happens here is iron plus 2 and cadmium going to cadmium plus 2 to iron. We use this reaction just as written, we didn't change it, but we did flip this one around. Cadmium became a reactant, cadmium plus 2 became a product. So if you're curious and stuff, like if you set a battery up and it starts moving around, you can actually figure out what value, where, what direction these things are happening. Positive E values are related to when reactions go. So you're almost always trying to find positive volt values when it comes to things. So let's look at some more of these and stuff, kind of questions. These are questions that happen sometimes. You might be curious, or someone might ask you, can the iodide ion reduce water? All right? So if iodide can reduce water, then placing iodide in water, you would start to see a reaction. All right? Have we talked about iodide reacting with water? Like, what happens when you put chloride in water? Does anything happen? You put table salt in water, does anything happen? Possibly, could have a pH change, but would you see, do you think, like the chloride reacting with water to make chlorine gas? Like, do you see bubbling? And no, right on. Chloride, bromide, and iodide are very AQ in water, all right? We only see them react usually if there's a lead, a mercury, or a silver. We have not seen any kind of reactions of iodide in water. If you did, then you couldn't make solids and stuff. The iodide would start reacting with water to do things. So let's predict, based on our knowledge of solubility, that iodide will not reduce water, because that kind of goes against the things we've been seeing so far. But predictions are sometimes lame. Let's look up in tables. And if you look up in tables, there is a reaction where water and a couple of electrons will make hydrogen gas and hydroxide, E naught minus 0.828 volts. And because we want to see if iodide will do it, iodide does make iodine. It's oxidized, so electrons come off, minus 0.535 volts. So if you add these two reactions together, notice how you end up with iodide and water. And if this reaction was going to occur, then iodide and water would make iodine plus hydroxide plus hydrogen gas, all right? So again, if iodide and water came together, and if this reaction would occur, would you see anything? What's the form of H2? Gas. What would the gas do? Bubbles, yeah. So if nothing else, you would see bubbles, all right? If you start putting iodide in water, according to this reaction, and if this was going to happen, you would see bubbles. Now, another thing you may not know is that iodine is kind of a dark color, kind of a dark purplish brown. So not only would you see these bubbles form, you'd start seeing iodide form, which is a dark kind of nasty color and stuff like that. So if this would happen, you would certainly see a lot. You'd see the gas form, you'd see kind of nasty brown iodine. But if you take these E cell reactions and add them together, you end up with a negative 1.363 volts. Spontaneous reactions only occur when E is positive. And this is certainly not positive, and it's actually quite negative. So this reaction, because of this number, we're going to say no, this reaction's not going to happen. We haven't talked about hydrogen gas forming and nasty brown iodine if you put these together either. So for all of these reasons, we're not going to predict it's going to happen. But EJ goes, oh, Dr. Russell, I really want this reaction to go. Well, don't worry, EJ, or whoever the rest of you might be thinking this, because you can make it happen. But you have to use an external source of electricity. And I kicked here the power outlet, not because I'm mad at it or anything like that, but because we can apply the positive version of this, 1.363 volts, and we can then make this happen. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. This reaction is not going to happen unless you reverse it. Like iodine, hydroxide, and hydrogen gas, that's just like a witch's cauldron brew of nastiness. It will make iodide and water. That will happen spontaneously because of the positive 1.363 volts. So iodide does not reduce it spontaneously, But as we're going to see here in a little bit, we can make it happen if we want to.
Oh boy. Questions?
Okay. So here's a question to cell potentials and stuff like that. We have mercury 2 plus going to mercury, tin 2 plus going to tin. The question is, will mercury reduce tin 2 plus to tin? Yes, no, or more info. Now, tin 2 plus to tin is this reaction right here, all right? Minus 0.14 volts. And the question is, will the mercury, which is this guy, make this happen? Now, if you want mercury to react with tin 2 plus, is mercury a reactant in this reaction as written? No, right on, it's a product, all right? So if we're going to make this happen, we need to reverse this reaction. We need to turn mercury into a reactant, and these two will become products. Then the tin 2 plus will be gaining electrons. If you flip this reaction, the mercury will be creating two electrons. So you have a source of electrons, and the electrons are being consumed. But what do we do to E when you flip a reaction around? Change the sign. So what was positive becomes negative. So negative 0.79 plus negative 0.14 is minus 0.9 something. Focus on the minus part of that. Does the minus 0.9 something mean that this reaction will occur spontaneously or not?
No.
No, that's right. This minus voltage that you get out of this one is enough to say this reaction's not going to be spontaneous. It's not going to happen by itself. We need to add a little energy, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit, to make this reaction go. Yes, Joseph.
So to make it work, can you just flip the equation and make it positive, or positive and equal?
Yes. And so what that would tell you, Joseph, if you flip this reaction, it does make it positive 0.93 volts. And what it says is that tin metal will convert mercury 2 plus into mercury. And that's kind of cool. But you still won't be able to have mercury itself turning tin 2 plus into tin. But you're right, that reaction would be spontaneous. That's right. Yeah, Neville.
Why would you flip it?
Cool. So what do we want as our reactants here? Mercury and tin 2 plus. Mercury right now is a product here. So we have to have mercury as a reactant. We need to flip this reaction around and make mercury a reactant. That will change the sign there on the E. So the equation will tell you kind of what you're looking for, and right now, because mercury is a product, that's enough to tell you to flip it. Excellent question.
So I guess it's just kind of weird that, like, you wrote that E naught equals E cathode, take away E anode, but, like, here you're using them, like, added together. I don't know why.
So it's northwest minus southeast if you do it that way. And I hate using it. And that's why I would recommend you not do it. Because if you just flip it and stuff, which people seem to have a more natural tendency towards, then yeah, you don't need to worry about it. So I would just say ignore northwest, southeast, all right? You flip a reaction, you change the sign, then you add them together. I personally find that much less confusing. Excellent, Heather. Yeah, good. You're seeing what I see, and that's why I hate that rule. I shouldn't teach it, I know, but this is what the e-chemists do, and they walk around like crystallographers in big black robes and chanting mantras, which I don't understand in Latin and stuff. And, oh, Prof. Hat back on. Did I say that? Sorry. Questions? Okay, all right, all right, all right. So, let's go back to the original idea here of iodine and water, all right? And I was babbling, EJ says, oh man, I want to have this happen. It is possible to make these negative voltages happen, but you can't just let them sit together and think it's going to happen like a Disney story, all right? What you can do is that if you see a non-spontaneous, which means negative E, a non-spontaneous value, you can essentially make them happen by adding some type of external voltage. And by far the most common is just to hook it up to a voltage outlet. You could also use a separate chemical battery that had a positive E and kind of shift the voltage into this itself. So this kind of way is a real handy way of doing a lot of things which really shouldn't happen by themselves. You can use a battery, you can use this voltage source just from the wall, you can use, you know, anything and stuff like that. You just need a source of positive voltage values. This introduces the idea of electrolysis, which is not taking off body hair for the summer, but anyway, electrolysis in this context means adding electricity from a product favored reaction to a reaction which is not product favored. So again, if EJ for some reason really wanted iodide to react with water, he could absolutely apply positive 1.363 volts in what's called an electrolytic cell, and that would make this happen. And this is a real powerful tool because sodium ions do not wish to become sodium metal, and chloride ions do not wish to become chlorine gas. But we as scientists can apply electrolysis to it to make it occur. Now, voltaic and galvanic cells are when you have a reactions with positive E values. This is the opposite, it's called an electrolytic cell. We have to add electrical energy, basically, to make this kind of thing occur. Now, it kind of feels, in some ways, like we're cheating here. We're cheating the whole delta G negative, delta S the inverse positive. But we're not really cheating it. We're just adding another product favored reaction energy into something like this, which is not product favored by itself. But it does kind of feel sometimes like you can cheat these laws a little bit, but you really just, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul or whatever that expression is and stuff, which I know nothing about separation of church and state. Other questions on that? Good. Good old Faraday, who was one of the main people involved with this stuff, really did a lot of electrochemical work. He's a fascinating dude. He wasn't really part of the science elite. He kind of came up through the ranks. That's pretty interesting to read about. But anyway, there's a way to relate the electrochemical cell potential, that E value, to Gibbs free energy. And the equation is delta G equals minus NFE. And F right here is a constant called the Faraday constant. And it's 96,485, or 9.6485 times 10 to the 4th, coulombs per mole of electrons transferred. And what this constant really is that if you have a mole of electrons that go by, they will deliver 96,485 coulombs of charge. Coulomb is like a weighted charge transfer. So this is the number we've been calculating, cell potentials. F is just this number, 96,485. N is the moles of electrons transferred. So in the last one, I believe it was 2 moles transferred, you would have an N equals 2. You'll see that N is usually, it's always a whole number. It's usually between 1 and 6. This is the last constant, I promise, that you have to know for the Chem 200 series. But it is one we're going to use a lot and stuff, so try to make sure that you know this, / put in your calculators, get a tattoo of it. No, don't get a tattoo of it, seriously. But anyway, Faraday's constant then, it's just a number and stuff we'll use to convert these things.
If we like just wrote it down on your hand or something.
Please don't go there and stuff, man. Yeah, I mean, that's usually not seen as real cool and stuff. Yeah, so, please don't go there. That would be cool. Thank you for asking that way. That's a good question. Now, if you have a product-favored reaction, your delta G is less than 1, all right? Delta G, which is negative here, because of this little negative sign here, means that E is going to be positive. So we look for positive E cell values. Those are the ones that happen. You push a button and something happens on it. So positive E implies negative delta G, which is kind of cool. On the other hand, a reactant favored condition, E would be negative. These are the ones that don't occur naturally and stuff. Delta G would be positive. Oh, what is this terrible Islamic Terra is talking about Faraday going to some separation of church and state place. I don't know what that is, but ignore that. I don't know what this was from, but it cracks me up. I don't know why anybody. Faraday was actually kind of a person of the people, as I understand, but anyway. Mysteries and chaos all around us. Questions? Okay, so negative E means positive delta G, but what we look for most of the time, positive E's, and that implies the negative delta G. The spontaneous negative delta G's would be positive E's. Here's a reaction, tin 2 plus and vanadium, making tin metal, vanadium 2 plus. E naught negative or positive 1.07. And the question is, what is delta G? So delta G minus NFE. All right, here is E. Now, if E is positive, what's going to be the sign of delta G? Negative, that's right. Negative times a positive E, delta G will be a negative number. So that wipes out A, B, and C. None of those numbers are right. What we can now do is focus on what is going to be N. And N is the electrons transferred in this reaction. Now, if you broke down tin 2 plus to tin metal, how many electrons would tin 2 plus need to become tin by itself?
Two,
that's right. N is going to be 2. And Madeline says, I'd rather work on vanadium. That's cool too. Vanadium to vanadium 2 plus, the vanadium would lose 2 electrons to become positive 2. So N is going to be 2 minus NFE minus 2 times 96,485 times 1.07. You get a really large number, all right? It's negative, but that's because the number is in joules. So if you divide by 1,000, then you'll get an answer which is in kilojoules. Questions on that? Yeah, Matt?
So the moles are only going to be the electrons in the
That's right, exactly. And each one will be a little different and stuff. Like in this one, it's 2, but it can be more than that as well. Now, one way that the Faraday is really helpful to us is it allows us to calculate how long some of these batteries will last, all right? So Rebecca and I are saying, hey man, we're just gonna take off and get out of here, but we're using a chemical home battery and stuff. Maybe we wanna know how long the battery's gonna last, because we don't wanna end up on the top of some deserted road and stuff, and no battery, my company is fun, but not that fun. So let's figure out how long some of these things will last, all right? So for example, silver plus going to silver, this would be 1 mole of electrons per what Madeline said. And if we know how much silver we have, we can then calculate things like this. Now, there's going to be some new kind of terms here. Current, which is what electricity comes out in, is usually in what's called an amp. And an amp is equal to a coulomb per second. And every battery has its own amp requirement. But what I'd like you to do is every time you see amp, which has a symbol capital A, cross out the A and put coulombs per second. Coulomb is big C, of course second is second. And you'll see that that makes a little bit more sense. So we're going to be talking about batteries, and batteries have different types of currents. And if you see current, which is just an amp, sometimes it gives the symbol I, just think about it as coulombs per second. Now those of you in physics, this is pretty zero order probably for you, because this is a lot simpler. But for chemistry, this works out pretty well. All right, so we have our battery, and the battery has a current of 1.50 amps. So amps, again, just cross out the A and put in coulombs per second. And our battery uses a silver plus to silver solution, which is a weird kind of battery, by the way. But anyway, we want it to go for 15 minutes. How much silver metal is going to be deposited? So in this type of battery, silver plus is going to silver metal. And we're going to run it through for 15 minutes. how much silver metal is created. And this is really nothing more than a type of a dimensional analysis problem. And what I would do, once again, is every time you see amp, just replace it with coulombs per second. And the reason you want to do that, it tells us here that this battery is going to go for 15 minutes. So if this is 1.50 coulombs per second, there are 60 seconds per minute, and we're running it for 15 minutes. So this number, 1350, that's the coulombs that's going to go through this in 15 minutes. This is what happens with the battery, and we're running it for 15 minutes, so we're finding essentially the coulombs it's going to run through. Now, once you have that number, this is now where the Faraday constant pops in. And remember, a Faraday, 96,485 coulombs per mole of electrons. In the 15 minutes that the battery is running, excuse me, we have 1350, that was on the last slide. And this one just relates coulombs to moles of electrons. So the 1350 coulombs means that 0.0140 moles of electrons have been transferred. Now, this is a silver plus going to silver. How many electrons do you need to go from silver plus to silver?
One.
That's right. So with this 0.0140 moles, one mole of electrons is needed to create one mole of silver. It comes out to be 0.0140 or 1.51 grams of silver. So for 15 minutes, this battery running at 1.50 amps, which is 1.50 coulomb per second, you'll be creating 1.51 grams of silver. Here's another example. This one is more like a type of a battery. And this battery is delivering 1.50 amps. What is an amp equal to?
Coulombs
per second. That's right. If you hear amp in this class, just convert it to coulombs per second. So 454 grams of lead are in this battery. We just want to know how long it's going to last. We don't care about what we're creating. We just want to know the time elapsed. So on that last problem, we went from time, 15 minutes, to the grams of silver that were going to be found. Here, we know how much lead we have. We just want to know how long this battery is going to take. So it's kind of the opposite of what we just did. You want to convert grams into moles of lead. So we'll use the molar mass of lead from the periodic table to turn it into moles. Lead is turning into lead to sulfate. So you can see here there's going to be two electrons that are being kicked out, all right? You can also see that as lead goes to lead 2 plus, two electrons will be created. So for every one mole of lead, you're going to get two moles of electrons. There's 4.38 moles of electrons here being transferred. Questions so far? From moles of electrons, the Faraday constant will tell us how many coulombs that is. So every mole of electron is worth 96,485 coulombs, which I'm sure Wade has in his calculator, not on his hand, but anyway, this comes out to be 423,000 coulombs, all right, which is a pretty good amount of coulombs as present. And this number again, amps, which is coulombs per second, will allow us to go from coulombs to time elapsed. So if you do that, time is nothing more than coulombs divided by coulombs per second, which is what an amp is. So if you take 423,000 coulombs divided by 1.50 coulombs per second, or 1.50 amps, 282,000 seconds. I have no idea how long that is. However, 60 seconds per minute, 60 minutes per hour, etc. You can get down to it's about 78 hours. Any questions on that? This is used for lots of different kinds of things. This is an example of if you had a gold solution and you want to turn it into pure gold. So obviously that would be a high economic value. Gold is not cheap. Anyway, we have a solution which is about 0.0100 moles of gold plus 3. And we want to turn this into gold, and we're using a current 2.00 amps. And again, what is an amp equal to? Coulombs per second. That's right. So 2.00 coulombs per second. All right. How many moles of electrons are there for every gold that comes from a gold plus 3? 3. That's right. It's going to take 3 moles of electrons to turn gold plus 3 into gold. So if you want to do this, that's fine. This is a bad James Bond reference. Don't worry about that. 2.00 amps, 2.00 coulombs per second. This is the amount of the gold plus 3 moles of electrons per gold plus 3 ion, this many moles of electrons, multiplied by 96,045 coulombs per mole of electrons. Moles of electrons cancel. And 2 amps, you would take a second per 2.00 coulombs, 1450 seconds. Any questions? So these kind of questions, all right, it's either about amount, turning it into time, like this one right here, or in the first case, we had time, I think it was 15 minutes, and we wanted to know how much was created. Moles, grams, something like that. That's how most of these things work out. And remember, amp is a coulomb per second. The Faraday constant relates moles of electrons to coulombs. Okay. The last equation I need to show you today, which is really the end of the stuff to learn for this chapter, is something called the Nernst equation. And what it does is it just relates having a battery at non-standard conditions. So in science world like this one, a lot of times we assume it's perfect 298 Kelvin, all the concentrations are 1 mole per liter. If you have a gas, it's 1 atmosphere. And in the real world, that doesn't happen very often because the temperature is nicer than 298, all right? Your concentrations are higher or lower than 1 mole per liter. And this dude named Nernst figured out this equation right here. Oh boy. E0 is the conditions, the cell potential under standard conditions. So if you are at 298 Kelvin and 1 mole per liter and stuff like this, this is the number you would get. E by itself, though, is the non-standard. So if you don't have 1 mole per liter, you don't have 298 Kelvin, that's when E will be different than E0. And E0 minus RT over NF, natural log of Q, is what you need. Now, some of these we've seen before, and we're just seeing them in different combinations. R here is the 8.3145 gas constant version, Kelvin temperature, Faraday constant, N is the moles of electrons transferred, like we've seen before. This E naught is the standard cell potential. And Q, as we'll see on the next slide, is that reaction quotient. So at the beginning of this term, we saw how you can have a Q, which is products over reactants, and you can compare Q to K. This is a place where Q actually pops in by itself. So if you don't have 1 mole per liter of everything, that's where it would pop up right in here. So, this equation, the Nernst equation, is actually super helpful to chemists that use electricity because often your temperature is not 298 Kelvin, that number changes. And often your concentrations are not 1 mole per liter, which is where that thing pops in. Okay. So let's look at some examples of how this works out. This is a reaction we looked at earlier where we have copper 2 plus and zinc making zinc 2 plus and copper. And if you're right at 25 degrees Celsius and the concentrations are exactly 1 mole per liter, then 1.10 volts will happen, all right? However, notice here what they did. They popped in some additional zinc 2 plus, all right? So zinc 2 plus, or did, excuse me, they added copper, I'm sorry. They added the copper 2 plus solution, the blue solution. Now, by Le Chatelier's principle, if you add a copper 2 plus, will that make this reaction go right, left, or not have any change?
Right,
that's right. Adding a reactant makes this reaction go to the product side. If it goes to the product side, all right, will that make this reaction more spontaneous or less spontaneous?
More,
good, that's right. Moving to the product side means more spontaneous, all right? And more spontaneous means negative dg is more negative, all right? Negative G is related to E, it's gonna make your E more positive. And if you look carefully at this silly little video, 1.11 volts is the new potential. It was 1.10 volts when it was exactly 1 molar. Now the copper 2 plus is more than 1 molar, so the potential actually goes up. If you are a scientist or an engineer and you're worried about precise voltage being delivered, Nernst equation can be critical, all right? Because man, if you don't have exactly the right concentrations, your potential will be different. That can mess up your electronics and stuff like that. You can still use Le Chatelier's to figure out kind of what's gonna happen here, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. Questions? Okay. Here's an example of how this thinking works out. Here's a reaction. We want to find the cell potential E when a zinc 2 plus concentration, 0.0010 moles per liter, pressure of hydrogen gas, 0.10 atmosphere, pH equals 0, 290 Kelvin. What the heck? What is this reaction? Seeing this for the first time this term, I'm also thinking that a little bit myself. Oops, prop that back on. Of course you can figure this out using Nernst equation. So let's talk about, first of all, is this reaction at standard conditions?
No.
No, good. Is the zinc 2 plus a standard condition value? What should a concentration be if it's standard conditions? 1 mole per liter, all right? 10 to the minus 3 moles per liter does not count. So zinc 2 plus, non-standard condition. Is the pressure of the gas standard conditions?
No.
No, it should be 1 atmosphere. It's less than 1 atmosphere, 0.10. Is the temperature standard temperature?
No.
No, all these thermal things are 298, and it's not a big deal, but it is enough to make us use this non-standard Nernst equation. Now, pH of 0 is actually standard conditions. When you figure out what the concentration of H plus is, it's 1 mole per liter. So the only thing on here that's standard is the pH. But first of all, we have to figure out what reaction's happening here, what's going on, and figure this out. We have H plus and we have H2. Does that remind you of a half reaction we looked at earlier? The Xi electrode is the standard hydrogen electron electrode and stuff that's used. And that is a value that's at 0 volts. So in this problem, what you have is we have the Xi electrode, which is good old H plus going to H2 or whatever. But we also have zinc and zinc 2 plus. Now we need to have a positive cell potential if we're not applying any. And so we're going to end up with a positive 0.76 volts. That means that zinc is going to go to zinc 2 plus plus 2 electrons. Back to Heather's comment, this reaction is written as a negative in the cell potentials. So I flipped it around because I want these two together to give a positive E cell so we don't have an electrolytic cell. This is the reaction that's going on. And notice here too that N is equal to 2. We'll use that here in a little bit. So if this reaction was at standard conditions, the cell potential positive 0.76 volt. But it's not. So now what we're going to do is we're going to start playing with the other parts of the Nernst equation. And E equals E0 minus RT over NF natural log of Q. And you just start plugging things in. E naught is what we calculated on the last slide. It's the cell potential under standard conditions. We're using Xi and the zinc to zinc 2 plus, so that came out to be positive 0.76 volts. R to 8.3145, Kelvin temperature 290, N is 2 electrons, 96,045 is the Faraday. We multiply all of that by the natural log of Q. And Q is the reaction quotient. It's like an equilibrium constant. It's going to be products divided by reactants. I need the H plus concentration, 10 to the minus pH, 1.0 moles per liter. Q, if you look at this part, products divided by reactants. We don't put the zinc metal in. We always exclude solids and liquids. But we do need the zinc 2 plus, 0.001. H2 is less than one atmosphere, so we'll throw that one in, 0.1. And H plus squared is 1 squared. That one's not as exciting. But all of this will give us the Q that goes right there. Plug this into your calculator. Minus RTNF natural log of Q comes out to be positive 0.12 volts. The new E value, 0.88 volts. If you think about this long enough, you can rationalize why it's the case. H plus and zinc really are under standard conditions, but zinc 2 plus was less, it was this number, and H2 was less, it was less than one atmosphere. So it's like by Le Chatelier's principle, we're taking away products. And by doing that, we would move to the product side. More spontaneous means E is going to be larger than 0.76 volts. Now, people don't like using the Nernst equations. I wonder why. Anyway, so sometimes if you have exactly standard things, you can get away by using different variations. And so delta G equals minus RT natural log of K, delta G equals minus NFE. So one variation on this equation you can get away from is how electrocell potentials E are related to K right there. This is one thing that sometimes people uses. And if you're at 298 Kelvin, then every R, T, and F are just constants. It goes down to positive 0.0257. So if you see that, that's what's used sometimes to relate an equilibrium constant to E. This one only works at 298. I'm not a super big fan of it. Sometimes you'll see the little triangle, which relates delta G to E to K, the three different expressions right there and stuff like that that are used. Question. The remaining slides are all informational. And you can tune out. I mean, you can pay attention and learn things and stuff like that as you go along. But it's mostly about batteries, different things. So in the time I have left, I'm going to try and get through as many of these as possible. But honestly, these are things now you can just kind of sit back, relax, and chill. Batteries are everywhere, and there's lots of different types of batteries. A primary battery is a reaction that cannot be recharged. This is a typical kind of a battery for a lot of them, which uses zinc and ammonium. Whoops.
The surrounding manganese dioxide from the plus 4 to the plus 3 oxidation state.
Basically, my goal in showing you these, once in a while I'm at Fred Meyer's and I'm looking like on the side of where I park, and here's someone just dumped a bunch of batteries, man. And that's not good, all right? You got zinc, you got ammonia, you got ammonium and stuff like that. the best way to dispose of your batteries is to hold on to all of them. And then once a year or so, if you go to one of Metro's hazardous waste cleanup, they'll take your batteries and they'll dispose of them the right way. They used to recycle them, but apparently that is not economically viable anymore. But they can at least take them so they don't go in our water systems and stuff like that. This one is pretty common, all right, and it's got some pretty serious stuff in it. At the very least, please throw your batteries away. I would prefer that you give them to Metro, but don't just throw them on the ground at Fred Meyer's, man. I always... It's a personal thing of mine. Now, there's different types of batteries, and they're all just made of nasty stuff, all right? They're powerful. We use them all. We use them in our phones and remote controls and stuff like that. I'm just going to show you, as I said, more examples of what's inside these
things. An alkaline battery, zinc metal at the anode releases two electrons to form zinc oxide under basic conditions. The two electrons are transported to the cathode, where manganese dioxide is reduced from the +4 to the +3 oxidation state. Hydroxide ions are transported from the cathode region to the anode region of the battery.
Chemically, it's really interesting to have a manganese +3. That's not super common, which is nothing you're expected to know, but that's kind of interesting. But again, notice all of the base, all right? Lots and lots of sodium hydroxide that leaks when the batteries are on the ground and stuff. That's not good for anybody.
A mercury battery is very similar to an alkaline battery. In this case, zinc is oxidized to form zinc oxide, while mercury 2 oxide is reduced to form liquid mercury. Hydroxide ions are transported from the cathode region of the battery to the anode.
Sometimes these little button batteries, you can see if they've been sitting around for a while, little drops of mercury. Please do not touch them with your hands. Mercury is really bad, man, and it's bad for the environment. But anyway, you can see the kind of stuff that's in them, all right? Nothing to be mellow about. Car batteries have lead in them and stuff, and a lot of times people will take the lead batteries and get some money back for them, which is cool. Again, kind of cool.
A 12-volt automobile battery is actually made of 6 cells connected in series. Each cell produces about 2 volts by the reduction of lead dioxide at the cathode and the oxidation of lead metal at the anode. This is a conproportionation reaction. The products of both the oxidation and reduction half reactions are lead 2 sulfate.
This reaction can be recharged, so if you drive your car around for a while, the charge will come back, which is kind of cool.
In a rechargeable nickel-cadmium battery, cadmium is oxidized at the anode to form cadmium hydroxide under alkaline conditions. The electrons are used at the cathode to reduce nickel from the +3 oxidation state to the +2 state. The products of each half reaction adhere to the electrode surfaces. Application of an external current to the battery can reverse the reactions, oxidizing the nickel back to the +3 state while reducing the cadmium hydroxide to metallic cadmium.
Having a nickel +3 is kind of an exciting thing for a chemist. It's a not usual state for nickel, but it's kind of fun. These, again, are rechargeable and stuff. They're not used as much as they were, but they're still cool. More examples of that electrolysis, which is making chemicals from electricity. This is when you have a tin 2 chloride, and you want to make pure tin and or pure chloride. And if you add electricity, the tin will go, tin plus 2 will go to tin, and the chlorides will turn to chlorine. So you can see there's kind of like a yellow color, that's the chlorine gas, and tin metal will actually start appearing. So you can make these pure chemicals from the ionic solutions if you know kind of what you're doing. And these are electrical leads with exactly the cell potential. So the E cell of the reverse reaction would be negative. We wouldn't expect this to happen, but if we apply electricity, then we can make it go down. These are just some more examples of how you can do things. This is a water reaction breaking up.
The decomposition of water is thermodynamically disfavored, but can be made to occur by electrolysis, the application of an external electric current. Here, platinum electrodes transfer electrons between two cell compartments to separate the decomposition products.
Notice how
gaseous oxygen rises from the anode at the left, hydrogen from the cathode at the right.
2 moles of hydrogen are created for every 1 mole of oxygen, and the moles are proportional to the volume. So this has doubled the volume, roughly, of this one right here, which is kind of a cool thing back to gas laws. If you want to make sodium metal, you have to use molten sodium chloride, which is super high energy and stuff like that. You can't just do it normally. Here's the actual cell potentials and stuff like that. This is a very negative cell potential, so if you add the positive, then you can make sodium metal and chlorine. But you can't do it in water. Like table salt in water won't happen because the water starts to break down before you make the sodium. So water will break down to hydrogen before the sodium ions become sodium metal if you use a water-based solution. So you just have to know what you're doing and stuff. And chloride's oxidized, blah, blah, blah. Here's a big thing where they make bleach, which is basically you need chlorine and sodium hydroxide. Pretty crazy. Another example of making sodium from iodide, copper from copper tube chloride, blah, blah, blah. If I had any time, I would explain more and stuff like that. Yeah, refining metals is really important for electronics and stuff. And this guy, which is what I wanted to talk about, came into his chemistry instructor and said, "How can I make lots of money?" And at the time, no one had a way to make pure aluminum. And so he worked on it really hard. He became super rich. He was apparently kind of a jack-a, though. He got kicked out of his own company after a while. But Alcoa is the company that's running around. Basically a way to make pure aluminum. So you guys can make lots of money and stuff, too. All right, we'll do start review stuff on Wednesday. Have a good day, guys. See you soon.